Scientists estimate that between 5,000 and 20,000 lung cancer deaths each year in the United States may be attributed to radon. Like cancer from cigarette smoking, lung cancer arising from exposure to radon is avoidable. You can quit radon, in a way. You can learn about it, discover the level of concentration, if any, in your home or office, and mitigate. Today and on Sunday at noon, we look at radon, what it is, where it comes from, where it's likely to be found, and what a homeowner or business person can do to safeguard the lives of those who live or work in radon-affected structures. This will be a call-in show. We are here, live. So if you have questions to ask, jot down our phone number, and around 1220 or 1230 or so, give us a call. I'll give our guests the first half hour to give us some basic information, and then we'll open the phone lines. The number to call will be 474-5044. Once again, to those people running for pencils, 474-5044. My guests today are Rich Seifert, energy specialist from the Cooperative Extension Service, and Dr. Chris Nye with the State Geological and Geophysical Survey Office and an affiliate professor with the Geology and Geophysics Departments at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Gentlemen, thanks for giving up your Sunday and joining us here on KUAC. I gave a 2-second definition of radon, which probably means very little, but let's get specific. What is it? Who would like to begin?
Oh, I'll take it. I've said this many times in public.
Okay, Rich Seifert.
Radon is a naturally occurring radioactive gas that is in the decay chain. I suppose I should start out by saying that it's going to sound a little strange, my definition, because one of the problems we have in understanding radon and making the public aware of it is that, without wishing to intimidate anybody, we're talking about nuclear physics here, and that's what makes radon so obscure and difficult and impenetrable to the senses for most people. Radon is a very heavy, naturally occurring noble gas, which means it's in the same series of chemical properties as argon, helium, neon, krypton, xenon, radon. That means it has not many chemical affinities for any other element, so it's very difficult to detect it chemically. You can't chemically change it. You can't oxidize it, for instance. You can't burn it. You can't do anything chemically to get rid of it or detect it or remove it from the air. You can filter it to a certain extent, and that's one of the ways we detect it. You put it in a charcoal mesh, for instance, or you watch it decay. Those are the two ways of detecting it. It's almost everywhere to some extent. There's an ambient level in the atmosphere that's pretty much innocuous. It doesn't really bother you very much because it's so low, such a low level. However, the one place it can be a problem is in your home when we operate our homes the way we do in the winter.
Because in Alaska we close doors and windows and
also operate heating systems, which tend to put a negative pressure on the building to suck air in the bottom and drive it out the top after heating it, which for lots of reasons is a radon mine, in a sense. That's the way our homes work.
Chris, where it comes out of uranium and other deposits and through the ground. Can you speak from your background as a geologist, although in as much lay language as possible, to tell us how and where and why?
Uranium is an element that's distributed in trace quantities everywhere on Earth, typically a few parts per million. In some rocks, it's in higher concentrations. Probably the schists around town here have higher concentrations than lots of other rocks in the state. In some types of rocks that has very low concentrations, and it's probably not the concentration of uranium that is the biggest issue in producing houses that have lots of radon in them. It's a question of how efficiently you can scavenge whatever radon is available and bring it out of the soil into the house. As Rich has said, it's houses are heated and the heat rises and it's sucking the radon out of the ground. The biggest issue probably is how efficiently radon can move out of the ground and into the house, and that's got to do with home engineering, which I'm sure Rich will talk about later, and basement construction and things, but also the pore space and the porosity of rock and soil underneath the house. So if homes are sitting on fractured bedrock, like many are in the hills around town here, then those fractures are superhighways for radon to migrate through. And with a certain amount of pressure or negative pressure, a large volume of air underneath the house can be scavenged, and all that radon can be brought into the house.
When you say scavenged, what do you two mean? You've both used that word.
Sort of look at it as a funnel. If you have a... it's much easier to do this with pictures.
You hold
we'll
them up and we'll
use
describe.
Your imaginations, everyone. We're about to embark on radio fantasy here. The area underneath a house can be, if you consider all that area which your house is connected with, there is a large bulb of soil under your house, which, in fact, in the winter may be more isolated than in most places because the soil permeability may be very low at the surface. It may be frozen. It may be capped. So that if you lower the pressure of the soil, pressure of the air in the soil below your house by sucking on it, you have this whole bulb of soil underneath your house from which you can draw, and that has lots of faults and fractures in it, from which you can draw air into the house. A lot of that has radon in it.
And you're sucking by your furnace. That's
yes,
what you're talking
and
about.
And you can do this. There's always going to be radon there because it's continuously generated from the decay of radium and uranium in the soil. So all winter long you have a continuous source of radon into your house. And the conditions, there have to be four factors for you to have, that have to be just right or just wrong, depending on how you look at this, for you to get radon into your house. You have to have the source of uranium in the soil. You have to have a permeability in the soil that allows the radon, when it becomes a gas. See, the irony of radon is if it wasn't a gas, it would not be an issue. If uranium and radium decayed to another heavy metal,
mm-hmm. It would just
this would be
there,
a non-issue,
right?
Yes. It would not be airborne. But just because it's airborne and just because it's long enough airborne, its half-life is about 3.8 days. Its average life is a little longer than that. It's just around long enough to be a problem, to be carried out efficiently into your house and into the air. The other two factors that need to be there for your house to get it is you have to have a negative pressure in the house.
Furnace.
And you have to have a pathway, some cracks, breaks in these... in the framing of the house, in the shell of the house, to allow the air to come in through the basement.
So we have two kinds of cracks. One's fissures in the bedrock down below the house, and another is a basement that is not solid,
that's
that
right.
is permeable itself.
And with any of those four factors not present, you do not have radon. Mm-hmm. And so from an engineering, from a mitigation point of view, you have to look at each one and say, which one of these is the most practical way to approach it to eliminate radon? Well, the most practical ones are the building-related ones. The last two are building-related, cracks in the foundation and the negative pressure. Negative pressure, to overcome that by positively pressuring your house, that's not effective and that's not wise, because if you put a positive pressure in your house, you would tend to blow air out of the house through every little nook and keyhole and cranny. And if your house is operated the way normal houses are in Fairbanks, your indoor air is warm and moist, and you would freeze your door locks shut,
right.
and freeze your keyhole shut, and freeze your windows shut from the inside out. Not a practical way to operate your house. So negative pressure is still a good way to operate your house, and in spite of the fact that brings radon in. The best way to approach it, then, is to allow the house to be sealed as well as you can from the environment, or to divert the air from under the house to the outside without lower the pressure even further below your house and divert it outside before it gets into your house. Those are the mitigation strategies. Those
like a smokestack, only not a smokestack.
Yeah, you're just putting a pump on the bottom. You put a... the way that, in fact, my own home was mitigated, I found radon in my own home, was to put a huge manifold of pipes in the walls and in the floor of the basement pad, through it into the soil beneath, and then put a suction on that and divert it outside. That did the trick.
I want to spend a good deal of time talking about mitigation, but I also think that our listeners are going to be asking themselves questions like, what about my house? So I want to turn to that first. First of all, we're listening again to Rich Seifert from Cooperative Extension Service and to Chris Nye, representing the U.S. Department of Geological and Geophysical Survey. Both gentlemen know a great deal about radon, have invited them here today to talk about the subject. I'll remind you, this will be a call-in show, and if you have your pencil, The number to call will be 474-5044. That's 474-5044. We'll be taking phone calls in another 10 or 15 minutes. Chris, your survey office has been looking over the past months at where in Alaska are areas most affected by radon. Can you tell us about that and talk about the state, but bear in mind also that we'll have listeners from Delta to Nenana, to some down to Denali, from Glen Allen up to Circle Central, Circle Hot Springs. So give some attention to our areas as well.
Okay, the Environmental Protection Agency has, for the last several years, been conducting surveys in conjunction with state agencies to try and figure out, on a nationwide scale, where radon problem areas are, which states have high radon, which states have low radon, what parts of what states have high radon. Last winter, I was working with EPA running that survey for the state of Alaska. And a lot of this was driven by EPA's interest in answering the question, what percentage of homes have high radon and in what areas. So to that end, we conducted a random statewide survey by telephone, contacted people. If they qualified and if they were interested, we would send them a free radon detector. We contacted about 1,400 homes and got the results back and sent the results on to the homeowners. But from that, we've been able to build a picture of what percentage of homes in the state have high radon and what areas have higher concentrations of or higher percentages of homes with higher radon, what areas have lower. So in general, statewide, there's on the order of 9% of the homes in the state have high radon concentrations.
Is that a big number or a little number compared to the lower 48?
That's among the lowest of any states that have been surveyed so far. There's a lot of states in the Midwest, for instance, where over a quarter or as many as a third of the homes have high radon concentrations. This is among the lowest of the states that have been surveyed. Part of that reflects the fact that there's a very small radon problem in southeastern Alaska and a very small radon problem in Anchorage, both for some geological reasons that we're not quite sure we understand quite yet. But Anchorage has only about 3% homes with high radon. Southeast has 1 or 2% homes with high radon. The Fairbanks, the interior, so that's everything north of the Alaska Range from Healy, Central Circle out to Tok, has about 18% homes with high radon, by contrast.
Was that a surprise or not?
I think that number is probably not as high as Rich or I expected it would be. We've known a lot about what the radon concentrations are because various agencies have been passing out detectors and have sort of been keeping an eye on you know, people that have been concerned about their own homes that have voluntarily gone in and gotten a detector. You know, we know what those concentrations are, and about a third of those were coming up high in Fairbanks. So this number is not as big as that, but a lot of the people who sort of thought they were not at risk didn't test, so we knew
it's going to be between random and non-random surveys.
Right.
We've made it clear what we think are risk areas and risk homes on a very specific basis. If your house has soil depths less than 8 feet to bedrock, and if you have a basement, and if you live in the hills, and you heat with a furnace that's inside your house, then test for radon.
Right,
and so you're not going to get a random sample from that, but we also believe that's where the highest risk homes are.
And we've measured what that risk is. If you look at just Fairbanks area, the number I gave you, 18%, was for the entire interior, and that includes some very high radon areas like Delta. But it's the entire interior. In the Fairbanks area, there's probably on the average about 12% homes with high radon concentrations. But if you look at just the homes that are out in the flat areas, South Fairbanks, wherever, then those are maybe 2 or 3% of those homes have high radon. And people that live in the hills are up 30 to 35% of those homes have high radon. So this is, for the first time, we know what the magnitude of the problem might be in the hills around town.
It's a high number.
And I don't think any of that is a surprise. That would have been my prognosis all along, was that the hills are going to be the area, and the hills around Fairbanks, and certainly in the Alaska Range, certain conditions, glacial till, source materials, a lot of different combinations. I don't think there's any surprise there,
right.
But the nature of a statistical sample is that you get the greatest sample from the largest population density, so that if those population densities are in Anchorage where there isn't a radon sample, it's going to look like Alaska just in general doesn't have a problem, because Alaska in general does not have a problem.
Alaska.
So there are specific areas where it's a very big risk, and there are other areas where it's not a significant risk at all.
Chris, what were you going to say?
Yeah, so is a percentage of Alaskan homes where there's a low risk, but as a percentage of square miles of Alaska, it's probably much higher. Mm. But the risk issue, I think, is really important here. It's, you said it earlier that maybe as many as 20,000 lung cancers are caused each year by radon. It's very easy to say, well, that's about the same number of people that die falling off a stepladder in a kitchen or die from home fires. I mean, it's not a big number in terms of deaths. And so people say, well, 20,000 deaths, that's not a big number. It's not a big risk. I'm not going to worry about it. I think what's really important to realize is that for many people, it's just not an issue at all. For most people, it's not an issue at all. But for those people that do have high radon concentrations, like 20, 30 picocuries or more, then for those people, it's a really significant health risk. It's not a risk that the entire population shares equally.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there are homes in town here where if those people were to live in those homes their entire lives, they would probably have better than 1 in 10 chance of dying of lung cancer just because of the radon in the home. So those are significant risks. Those are the homes that people should know about and should fix.
And I'm making guesses here, slightly educated guesses anyway, but if someone lived on Chena Ridge, Esther Dome, Murphy Dome, Lackloy Hills, down around Denali, up around Circle, Delta, their ears should prick up.
Yes.
And they might be advised to be tested. Are there areas in our general listening area for KUAC that I have skipped?
I would add to that Skyline Drive above Farmers Loop,
mm-hmm.
Certain areas of Goldstream. In fact, there have been some areas in the dredge tailings in Fox, which I would advise people to check because of the disturbed nature of the soil there and the disturbance leading to increased permeability and such. And the Gilmore Dome area, all the areas that are high, south-sloping hills where there are shallow subsoils and there's slightly highly mineralized soil, highly mineralized belts.
What we talk about in the Fairbanks area itself here is people that have homes with basements at or near bedrock, and that's mm-hmm. up on the hills, because down off the hills is where all the lust is, where all the
deep silts and
deep silts. But that's not the only geological scenario that can produce high radon. Basically, mm-hmm. what we need is a way to efficiently move a lot of radon out of the soil into the home. In the Fairbanks area, the bedrock is very permeable to gas, and the soils aren't. I think in places like Delta and Palmer, Wasilla, that are also showing a lot of homes with high radon, those are homes in relatively flat areas, and what that's reflecting is the fact that they're built on very coarse glacial gravels, and those gravels are very porous, and they can also allow a lot of air to be swept into the home.
Yeah.
So
it's a matter of how big that bulb under your house can possibly be.
That's right.
And
mm-hmm.
on a very permeable gravel, that bulb can be huge.
So there's two things about
the key.
The size of the bulb. One is just the size, the volume of air you can excavate, and also radon decays.
How far it can travel.
A bucket full of radons, half of those will be gone in 3.8 days. So the other item in the equation here is the size of the bulb is determined by whether or not gas can get from the edge of the bulb to your house in 5, 6, 7 days before mm-hmm. all the radon is decayed away. So it's even if it was just a question of excavating air, then even if the soil was fairly was not porous and it took a long time for air to migrate, and you could still get it there, if the radon didn't decay, the radon would still come into the house.
Yeah. I think that's what you have in deep silts, is you have it's there down at the base of the silt, but it cannot get through the silt in the time that it takes for it to decay, so it saves you.
And then once radon decays, it decays to other heavy metals, plutonium and bismuth, that are ionic, and they stick to whatever they're near. And that's actually, ultimately, the health risk is not the radon decaying in your lungs. It's radon decays to these other metals, polonium and bismuth, that because they have ionic attractions to other particles, they stick to little tiny dust particles, not even dust, but aerosol particles so small you can't see them.
Or
can't
filter. Tars of cigarette smoke, for instance.
And then I breathe it in, and my lungs are pretty much a closed system in that way, and damp and moist, and hold on to things. And right.
They could glom onto lung tissue,
Little aerosol particles will stick to your lung tissue, right? Yeah. And they are carrying the bismuth and polonium, which then decay. And so that's a way to actually, if they decay some millimeter away from lung tissue, then by the time the alpha particle has traveled to the lung tissue, it's slowed down quite a bit and does less damage. It's these ones that actually stick right to the sides of your lungs.
Let me give you something that is, I think, another foray into imagination on the radio.
Good.
Here.
If you pictures take a, on the air.
Yeah, it's this idea of what a picocurie per liter is, very obscure sounding. Nobody in normal mortal activities day to day understands what that means. A picocurie is a measure of radioactive decays per unit time. And if you have an activity of one picocurie per liter, a liter is a little more than a quart. It's about 1 1/3 quarts of volume. If you had that volume of air, one picocurie activity would mean that 2.2 on the average decays per minute occur in that volume. So if you had a radon level of 100 picocuries per liter, that means that 220 decays per minute of radon in that volume would occur. And you can sort of see that that's also close to the volume of your lungs. So that if you were living in an environment where there was 100 picocuries per liter activity, which has, it's not common, but there are homes in Fairbanks area that have that level of activity. My house had it during a week in November 86, because I measured it that time. It was over 100 for a week there. It's below, cold temperatures. So you're getting, what is that a second? That's more than 3 per second, pop, 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 just going off all the time in the volume of your lungs, just continuously, and then also having all of those daughter nuclei there generated in your lungs at that time. It's kind of a spooky but illustrative perception of what's really going on. Mm-hmm. And the only way you can see this happening is we have a device called a leukocell, and it will digitally count when it sees in a volume of air that you've trapped the decays of all the daughters and radon itself. And you can see these things ticking off, and it'll give you you can do back calculations and figure out what the picocuries per liter are. But that, it's sort of like a Geiger counter, and hearing the ticks of every one, you can see it happening, and it's
eerie, huh?
Yeah. Very spooky.
So.
I want you to talk about November of 86 a little later hour, so people can get the picture here. The next thing I want to talk about is testing of homes, but we have someone on the line that might be polite to let her off the line and onto the air. Are you there? I hear someone talking. Do you have her turned up, John? Hello, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, good. Speak to us now.
Hi. My name's Trish.
I don't hear anything.
And I have two questions. One is, can you find out if a piece of property has a radon potential or problem before you build a house on it? And the second one is,
maybe you can relay your question.
With all the deep wells we have in the area, might we be drinking radon dissolved in our drinking water?
Thank you. Hold on. I didn't have the earphones turned up for my guest. So the first question she asked was, is there a way you can find out about the potential of radon concentration, which may be emitted from the ground before you build? And the second was, is there a possibility of concentration in the drinking water? Is that accurate, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay. I turn it over to you two gents.
Well, you want to take any of these? The answer to that is yes. You can detect the radon level in the soil before you build. I'm not sure it's the best approach to the problem. I think a much more safe approach, although perhaps more expensive, would be to anticipate it. If you're going to build on a site which has the conditions that I mentioned earlier, the shallow soils, high on a hill, mineralized areas around Fairbanks, for instance, you can generally anticipate that you could build a house with mitigation of radon anticipated in the construction. It may cost you $500 to $1,000 to do it at that time, to build a ventilated gravel-filled area below your basement and put piping in there with perforations so that you could stub up a pipe into your basement, cap it. If you needed to ventilate that area later when you had radon in the house, you could easily do that by installing a fan and blowing it out the side of the basement.
something that you do in anticipation of being able to mitigate it if it should be a problem. The reason I say that is there's not a lot of correlation between what's in the soil and what gets there. It all depends on how well you built the house and how your house is operated. So just because the soil has radon in it doesn't mean that if you built a house well and tight, you would have it in your house. On the other hand, if you anticipated that if it's there, you could build a house that would easily mitigate it, you're safe on both accounts.
Okay.
You can always get there if you have the anticipated system. What we have in Fairbanks is the opposite. We have a whole housing stock, which is unlikely to be turned over in any foreseeable future because of the housing market crunch. And not many people building new houses. We have to go in after the fact and try and mitigate, which is terribly expensive, terribly disruptive, difficult, just because of all those other reasons. People just unwilling to do all that for something that they don't understand about well and have a difficult time assessing the risk of.
Okay.
The water.
Quick question number two. Chris Nye, water in, radon in water?
Radon definitely does dissolve into well water, and for people that have wells in their homes, that radon is carried up from depth, and it degasses as you send the water through a shower head or something like that. It definitely is a problem in areas like Maine. It's probably their biggest source of home radon is well water, rather than stuff coming up from the soil. In the Fairbanks area, a few wells have been measured, and the concentrations are not high. They sound high. Their concentrations up to about 6,000 picocuries per liter of water, which doesn't have the same effectiveness. I mean, it's not equivalent to 6,000 picocuries in the air.
No, in fact, 10,000 picocuries per liter of water can degas and cause about 1 picocurie per liter in air. That's
okay.
About the equivalent.
Right.
So that my perception, and I hope you would concur, is that water is not the issue. Most of the radon in Alaska is not waterborne, and water wells do not contribute significantly to radon problems in Alaska.
Okay, so if you're going to build a house, there are things you can do, and you probably don't need to be too concerned about your well water.
Right.
Tough, good.
Yeah, and people that are on city water is probably even less of an issue because that water is traveling through pipes and coming from someplace else, and it's going to be largely degassed by the time it comes to your house. It's,
okay.
It's people that have their own wells that can have a higher problem, a bigger problem, but I'm not aware that that's a problem in Fairbanks. It certainly is a problem elsewhere in the country, though.
Also is the case if you have delivered water. It's out of the, it's able to be degassed for often a few days before you even get it, and it sits in your house degassing, and if the degassing occurs in the tank, then the particles are maybe in solute, but it's probably not available to you as easily as they would be in air.
Okay. I'd like to invite people to call in if they've got questions or thoughts about radon in the interior of Alaska, especially in the interior of your home or lung capacity. The number to call is 474-5044. That's 474-5044. My guests today are Rich Seifert from Cooperative Extension Service and Chris Nye from U.S. Geological Survey.
I'm with the State Geological
State
Survey.
State Geological Survey.
There's managers that pay attention to those words.
Oh.
They would want me to say the right thing.
I'm awfully sorry. Chris's supervisors, it's all my fault. Our topic today is radon. You're listening to Sunday at Noon, and I'm your malaprop host, Susan McInnes. Gentlemen, I want to test my house. How do I go about it, and what kinds of tests are there? I throw it out.
Chris, go ahead.
Go ahead.
There's two methods to test for radon. One is a charcoal test, where essentially it's an activated charcoal filter, and you just put a pile of activated charcoal on a shelf someplace, and it absorbs radon out of the air, and you package that up and send it into the whoever it is that sold you the test kit a few days later, and they analyze it and come back with a concentration.
Do I put this anywhere in my house, and do I use one or 10 of them?
It's good to start with one. If you start seeing that you have a really, really big problem, if it comes back, you know, hundreds of picocuries, then you know you've got a serious problem and it's time to take action right then. If it comes back at zero or one or two picocuries like mine did, I just figure I don't have a problem and I don't worry about it. If it comes back in the middling range, 4, 5, 10 picocuries, then you might want to think about putting out more in different areas of your house to try and understand more clearly what's going on. But these charcoal detectors are available commercially around town here. I know last winter when there was a lot where radon was in the news a lot more, most of the grocery stores and drug stores and building supply stores had detectors, typically at the pharmacies and in the grocery stores where you could buy them.
What's the cost range for these things? Do you two know?
$15 or $20.
Oh, yeah. So this isn't a big investment I'm making in answering a question here.
No. It's
cheap insurance.
And then if it looks like your house has problems, you can do further tests, and you can do that either by deploying more charcoal canisters or by getting things called alpha track detectors, which is a different technology for detecting radon. It's the alpha decays from the radon, make little scratches in a piece of glass that's sealed in a filtering device, and then you send those back, and the lab essentially counts the number of scratches on the glass, and that translates back to the number of radon atoms that have decayed. Those detectors you can leave out for longer periods, mm-hmm. 3 months to a year, and so you get a better long-term average. I mean, the question with radon is not whether you're exposed to short, high-intensity bursts. It's really the long, your lifetime average radon. So it's, what's really more important is not whether or not for a few weeks in November or December you go up above 4 picocuries. What's important is what your long-term average is. So these alpha track detectors, which are available through the Cooperative Extension Service, and Rich will be glad to provide some for you.
Cost, Rich?
$30.
$30.
They're actually made available through us in cooperation with the State Health Radiologist's Office in Juneau. Sid Heidersdorf is that fellow's name, the State Health Radiologist, and he had been... back as early as mid-1986, he had been doing voluntary state radon surveys using these detectors. People would buy them for $30. Sid's job is that he is supposed to be the person who protects the population at large from radiation hazards. So he wanted to have some way of getting his handle on the what is the risk due to radon in the state? So he was just doing the best he could with the resources he had. And when he found out that Fairbanks was a high interest and high radon risk area in some respects, we offered to cooperate with him and make those available here rather than have people go all the way to Juneau for them. So that's why we have them, essentially. Okay. I would also like to just point out that we have a radon information pamphlet that's free for the asking at Cooperative Extension, which discusses where you can get radon test kits, talks about the advantages and disadvantages of both, includes the EPA Citizen's Guide to Radon, tells you what it is, how it happens, all that sort of things, gives you some risk estimates, and also has a list of all the radon test kits that meet the EPA test protocol, which is about the only quality assurance we have. This is a fairly loose arrangement right at the moment. And those were all published in the 1987 Consumer Reports, July 1987 Consumer Reports magazine. And then there's a list of terms and definitions of what all these remote and obscure names mean.
Good. And before we leave today, we'll give phone numbers, so keep your pencils handy, folks. We have two callers on the line. Hi, you're on Sunday at Noon. Do you have a question for Rich or for Chris? Are you here? Call back if you've left us, okay? Hi, are you there?
Huh. Well, yes, I was just calling. I had two questions. One was regarding the charcoal test, but if those other detectors are available, that's no big deal. But anyway, I have a cabin out here at Goldstream Valley. Is there any conjecture about radon concentrations out this way?
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier, Chris, right?
There are certainly some homes out in the Goldstream area that do have high concentrations of radon. But you said cabin. Many cabins are built up on pilings, and there's open air between them and the ground. I don't know if yours is like that or not.
So I would just diffuse out rather than being sucked in. Well, I guess that would depend on the bottom of the cabin, too.
Well, if the gas comes up through the soil and hits open air, it'll just be blown out with whatever breeze there is there. If the cabin's on pilings and there's open air between that and the ground, then there's no pathway for the radon to get from the soil to the inside of the home, and it's not going to be a problem.
just a thought. don't mean to be facetious, but I wonder if there is a serious problem with the outhouses out here. Anyway, thanks a lot.
Do we want to answer that,
it's voice? Lifetime exposure, depending on how much time you spend. If you're going to read Moby Dick, you might have a problem.
Yeah,
just
thanks
don't. Chris advises you not to read any long books. And secondly, I mean, my cabin when I lived in the Goldstream 100 years ago was very leaky in my outhouse, even more so. So perhaps it was not a concern.
Well, the one of the things that I'd like to make clear is that, for instance, if you live on a permafrost soil, most of rural Alaska is on permafrost and build on piles and don't have, like Chris said, any major contact. You need soil contact to get to have radon. If you have that kind of a circumstance, that's the only, I've often said this very facetiously as well, that's the only reason I know that's a good one for building on permafrost.
You won't have radon.
You'll have a devil of a time with everything else, but you won't have radon, for sure.
We're talking on Sunday at noon today about radon. My guests are Rich Seifert and Chris Nye, and we have another call. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Can you ask a question, please?
My name is Mary, and I live in the Goldstream Hills, and about a year ago or so, we did test our basement for radon with one of the charcoal tests and came out with a reading of 20 picocuries per liter. And I was just wondering what our next step should be. We are thinking we should retest. Should we go for some more charcoal-type tests at various locations in the house or use one of the other types of tests available?
Rich.
Yeah, this is Rich. I would urge you to get a 3-month test and retest starting any time soon. This is the best time of the year to test, starting mid-October to mid-March.
And just to clarify, this is the best time because we keep our windows and doors closed.
You know, the
right?
heating season is going to be the time when most of the radon will be, the conditions will be right so that your house operates as a radon mine.
And on her 3-month test, are there particular things she should do?
Well, EPA wants you to test and put the location of the test in the worst possible condition for the house. I would ask you this. Does anyone sleep in your basement?
No, it's not used for sleeping. At this point in time, there's an open doorway between the basement and our main living level. And then we also have a loft area. And I was wondering whether we should place a test at each level of the house or whether it would be better to concentrate tests at various locations in the basement.
How do you heat your house?
We heat it with an oil furnace, which is located in the basement, and also with a wood stove on the main floor.
My suggestion would be put a long-term test in the bedroom, either the master bedroom or where your children sleep, because, in fact, this is where your major exposure in your living conditions will be, presuming that some people work during the day or kids are away at school. You really spend most of your time, if you're a normal mortal, in a normal suburban American lifestyle, you will spend most of your time at home in the bedroom, hopefully.
That's true.
So that's where I think the major risk is, and this is what I tell people. I don't think it's important to know that in some small nook and cranny where you keep your canned rutabaga in the basement is a high radon risk to you. I think the radon risk is mostly where you spend it, so that's where you ought to test.
In general, does radon tend to move through a house to higher areas in the air, or is it concentrated more in the basement and low regions of the house?
It'll come in at the basement. This is Chris. And so that's the first where it'll come into the house. If
yes.
there's really open air circulation from the basement to the rest of the house, then it will be evenly distributed throughout the house.
That's why I ask how you heated your house. Yeah. Is it a forced air heater or
it's a hot water baseboard system.
Well, there probably will be some stratification. Probably will be more in the basement.
It does tend to sink.
Not really. That's, I think, a wishful thinking myth. it's subject to Brownian motion. It's all these statistical mechanics, physics things. But generally, there is not a good reason to presume that radon won't be fairly evenly distributed homogeneously throughout your house with a reasonable amount of time. It takes a few days, perhaps, but it's around long enough for that to happen. In my own house, I had a forced air heater, so my heater comes on and very, very efficiently and homogeneously mixes and distributes that radon equally to all corners and crannies of the house. So that's why I ask what type of heating system you have.
Because it follows the airflow.
Yeah. It's a little less efficient to do that with an oil-fired baseboard, but it will happen to some degree nonetheless.
Okay. Okay. I'll be in this week to pick up a couple of those tests. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm.
We have two more callers on the line. We'll turn to the second one. I hope that was the next one. Yes, it was. Hi, are you there?
Yes.
You're on Sunday at noon. You have a question?
Yes, I have a question for Rich. I didn't hear any comment on Chena Hot Springs Road, and I'm concerned about when you find out, or if you find out, that you have high concentrations of radon, the cost for solving this problem, and for a particular personal need here, since we have a home that's built, one of those sealed homes that was built with a air-to-air heat exchanger in it, if we should probably turn off the air-to-air heat exchanger in order to test the home, and how long would we need to leave that off if we do need it to turn off? How long would we leave it off before we start testing?
Let's talk about the testing question first, because the mitigation answer is fairly long, I would think.
I would certainly have you tested?
No, we've been afraid to test.
I see.
Well, no human.
I don't know about the conditions. I don't think we have, at least at CES, enough experience with the Chena Hot Springs Road area to say. It certainly, there are locations on the north side of Chena Hot Springs Road in the hills and whatever where I would think there would be prime conditions for radon. There are other areas where I would presume it would be very, very low. I would never turn off my air-to-air heat exchange system to do a test. You want to operate a test under the conditions that you would normally be living, and there are lots of good reasons, and that's why you have it, to maintain good air quality. The air-to-air heat exchange system should be operating in nearly balanced position pressure, so it can't be hurting all that much. It may have slight negative pressure, but it can't be hurting all that much if you're heating your house in addition. No good reason at all to turn off the air-to-air heat exchange system. My advice to you is go get a first cut test. The standard procedure we recommend is a screening test, cheapest first. If you have a problem, it should show up in a 3 to 7 day test.
And that's a charcoal filter.
And that's a charcoal filter, a bag, whatever. And yeah, we even there's one available for mail by mail for $12. So that would be my strategy: test and know. Don't cross the bridge until you come to it. If you don't have to mitigate, God help you. You don't need to worry about the cost. It's not easy, but it often is a very site-specific, house-specific case, and I couldn't sit here and tell you what I would do to your house to mitigate it without having some professional look at it and do a surmise of how your house works and what would be best to mitigate it.
Sounds like we have an airplane taking off somewhere here. No, I know it's on the air, John. My engineer is shrugging his shoulders.
Is that a good answer?
Is that helpful, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Now, here's a question for the two of you. Are there professionals in town who could come out and look at a radon-tested house? He lifts up a blue piece of paper. Can everyone see this?
this
I love
this
radio.
This paper is entitled Radon Testing Services Available in Fairbanks as of November 1, 88.
But that's for testing.
Available for...
What if I know I have radon and I want to worry about how much it's going to cost and what I have to do to my basement?
Yes, there are engineers in town that know
yes.
a whole lot about radon, and
okay.
they can come out and take a look. I don't
Excellent.
Know what it costs, and we can provide their names.
Their names are on this sheet, too. It
Good.
Says only radon testing, but also that means testing real-time with very expensive instruments in your house. There's lots of ways to do that, and
okay.
we have a compiler list for that reason. We are very fortunate, I think, as a community here, to have a very high level of expertise. It's ironic that we had the problem here because we seem to be very capable of dealing with it at the same time. That's very positive.
It's good news
for everybody and for people who really have a problem and need to address it immediately. There are people out there who know what they're doing.
I want to give just a moment to the woman's comment that she said when she said she's been afraid to test. There have been periods in my life when I haven't wanted to go to the doctor because I know he's going to give me bad news. Kids don't want to take their report cards home. The better course of valor here is to find out, is it not? I mean, you want to know, is it broken or is it only sprained? Who do you go to find out?
Yeah, I mean, I think that people would definitely want to know. I good friends of mine also are sort of putting it off and
sure.
thinking, well, if we know that we have high radon, we'll probably have to fix it, and we're broke right now. And, most of these people are going to run a test and go, oh, phew, it's not that big a problem anyway. I don't have to worry about it. I mean, statistically, even in the hills, 70% of the people are going to be able to invest $20, and they're going to be able to sleep soundly after that. Some people will end up knowing that they have concern levels, 20 or more picocuries, that they really should be thinking about.
There is a, I'm going to get put in a pitch for the air we breathe right now, because in that video that's going to be shown at 9 o'clock on Tuesday night on KUAC-TV, in there are instances of people who have interviews with people who have found radon in their homes, and they're very instructive. And I happen to be one also. I have a neighbor, likewise, who didn't test, even though he knows that I'm right next door and I had some, and he got a survey from the EPA test. He was one of the randomly chosen people, and he tested, and he had like 3 picocuries.
Negligible.
Yeah, which shows you several things. It shows you that houses side by side can be very, very different. Just because your neighbor has it doesn't mean you will, and vice versa. Just because you have it doesn't mean your neighbor will. Right. So there is always going to be this hesitation of unwillingness to do bad news. And a lot of times it's very valid, because people may not be able to afford to do anything in the short run. In my own case, to add some melodramatic affect to this, my father died of lung cancer in Pennsylvania the week I found out I had radon in my house. I got the phone call from my wife while I was at my father's funeral in Pennsylvania. And I also, ironically, some of the inheritance I received on his death was used to mitigate radon in my own house. So there was a very karmic relationship here. And I used my house as a good test case for mitigation, what works, because I did a lot of hit or miss, poor investment just on trial and error that I would not necessarily do again. And we learned a great deal. Some of the people who did my test are now those people who I find would be good recommendations. I can't say that over the air. Just because they didn't do my house doesn't mean they don't know how to do radon mitigation. But there are people there who have learned, and who I've helped up on the learning curve, simultaneously with helping me up on the learning curve as to how this all works, what the physics of the process are, and that there is certainly life after radon.
Mitigation is, I think we should repeat, something that Rich and engineers and architects here in town know a whole lot about, and how to do it here in the interior versus, you know, other pamphlets you get to just tell you in general how to do radon mitigation.
Exactly.
We do know a lot about it, but it is something that's really tailored to each house. It may be really expensive. It may not be expensive. The caller that called in previously that had a basement she didn't use very much with an open doorway between there and the living space, if she has high radon in the basement, it may be just as simple as putting a doorway on and putting some caulking around the door. And just, you know, what's the door cost? What's caulking cost?
And then might she vent that basement out?
Well, you might just put in a air supply for the furnace, mm-hmm. and you're only moving heat from the basement to the... You're not moving air, necessarily. That may be more complicated than that. You may want to have air in the house to pressurize it in some way that would keep air from coming from the basement. Lots of complicated choices, not necessarily expensive choices, though.
Okay. We've got a couple of callers on the line. The number to call if you want to join in is 474-5044. Today on Sunday at noon, we're talking with Chris Nye and Rich Seifert about radon. Hi, are you there?
Yes.
You've waited a long time. I thank you.
It's okay. I'm wondering how effective ion generators would be, and if it's used in conjunction with a charcoal filter to pick up the particulate matter that's taken out by the generator.
Gents? Ion generators?
I don't know how Chris feels about this, but generally, I have no direct experience that countervails ion generators. However, I presume that they are not worth a lot. I have a friend in the heating and ventilating business who is constantly trying to convince me that putting a charcoal filter on the return for an air furnace would do the trick, and you could even keep the furnace fan on 24 hours a day to move all the air and filter it that way. That seems crazy to me. The point of radon mitigation is to keep the radon from getting into the house in the first place. If you have to filter it once it's there, you're already behind the eight ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you
well,
cannot help some air from get having radon in it. So,
yeah, I was thinking of a temporary solution until you could correct existing circumstances.
I don't even think it's a worthy temporary solution because it isn't really a solution. It's kidding yourself, I think, in all honesty.
And on a temporary basis, once again, we're looking at your sort of average exposure over a long period of time. I'm not sure what you'd gain by, even if it did work, by lowering your home radon for a year until you got around to or found money to fix it or whatever.
Yeah, there's been no studies regarding that.
Well, I have a citation right here on the article from Consumer Reports that says, can air purifiers help? And it says, the bottom paragraph is, the net effect on health risk on the average an air purifier seems to provide little or no benefit. There's a lot more I could just read off here. It'd be boring, but...
That's the chemical type they're talking about. I'm not thinking of Lysol-type air purifiers. I was just wondering, so think about it.
You said ion generators.
Right.
What would you presume an ion generator would do that an air purifier doesn't?
I've seen that they remove smoke, for instance, by charging the particulate matter, and it precipitates out of the air, and I was wondering if radon would also react in the same way.
Okay, you can't ionize radon because it's a noble gas, so
yeah,
you can't... put a charge on it and move it. Once it decays to polonium and bismuth, then it is charged, then you probably could remove it from the air. But the half-life of radon as a noble gas is 3.8 days. If it comes into your house, it'll stay there for days, several days. The half-life of the polonium and bismuth byproducts are 3 to 17 minutes, I think.
Yeah,
depending on which
less
one.
Less than half an hour.
Less than half an hour. So the amount of time that this radioactive material is going to be in an ionic form where an ion generator could operate on it is going to be very small compared to the amount of time that it's in a noble gas form where I don't think the ion generator could do anything to it at all.
That brings me to another idea. If radon's half-life is 3.8 days, wouldn't that make the charcoal test that less efficient I can use a word, because of the time involved in getting it shipped out to be tested?
That's important, and that's the problem we had with the surveys, they do decay away, and you really should get the detector back to the company in a few days. We had no problem during the survey getting detectors back to where the lab was, which was in Alabama, from any place in urban, if you will, Alaska, in the 2 days that they required.
Yeah, didn't ship them book rate.
No, we ship them airmail, but that's certainly a concern. If you're doing a charcoal test and you forget to mail it for a week.
Do another one.
Yeah. Right.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you. This is Sunday at Noon. We're talking about radon today, and we have another caller on the line. If you'd like to call, you've got about 7.5 minutes. The number is 474-5044. Caller, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for waiting.
Yes, two questions. Have you done any tests in Delta, and is the radon problem more concentrated in bedrock? If you have many feet of gravel beneath you, do you have less of a chance of having a radon problem?
Chris Nye.
In the course of the survey, we did get 30 or 40 detectors into Delta. I'm not sure if that's enough to where we can really say what the percentage was, but at least half of them came back over 4 picocuries. So I think Delta does look like an area that's does have significant radon problems. Gravel over bedrock. It's a question of how much air you can move into the house, and so whatever the however, if the ground under your house is porous, it will increase your chances of having high radon concentrations in the house. I guess maybe I didn't get all of that first question, the second part.
Was there anything unanswered, sir?
No, ma'am. That certainly let me know. I wasn't aware that there was a problem with a couple hundred feet of gravel beneath, so I think I'll do the test. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Certainly we have places in like Palmer and Wasilla that are built on really thick glacial outwash gravels that do have problems. So.
Okay. Chris Nye and Rich Seifert with us here today to talk about radon. If you've got a question you'd like to ask or a comment about radon, the number to call is 474 5044. Chris, there's going to be a major report coming out in a week or so. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, every year the EPA has a press release where they report the results of the 6 or 10 states that they did surveys on, similar to the one that we did in conjunction with EPA. So every fall there's a press release where they report the results for that year's states, and it generates a lot of interest on a national scale, and there's a big flurry of activity. EPA will be discussing the results of the states they studied this year, I think on Wednesday of this week. So look for things coming out in the newspaper around then.
Okay. I remember Nilo Kopanen put through a bill last year, and I think tried the year before, regarding radon and radon mitigation. I don't remember what happened to that. Do we have any legislation in our state concerning radon testing or mitigation? And is there any money set aside? I remember the earlier caller who said she thought it was going to be very expensive and was concerned about that.
The answer is no and no.
No and no.
There was last year a small amount of money available for radon mitigation as an incentive coupled with the Alaska Craftsman Home Program. To my knowledge, only one house got advantages in that regard. It was not very well known. There was a very small amount of money available. Generally, the problem politically is one of attitude. Will the state get involved in mitigating this? Because it is a parochial problem. Unfortunately, it's conceived and pretty much generally not well known to be a Fairbanks and Northern Alaska problem, or interior Alaska problem. And so if some legislator, specifically one I happen to know from the Aleutian Islands, says, "What's in it for me?" Mm-hmm. Fairbanks isn't in it for her. So I don't think there's much hope of getting that sort of a effect on the issue. There may be some help from the federal level, tax benefits, for instance, for radon mitigation. It's obvious to me that it would have health benefits in the long term, and that people won't do this just for the tax benefits,
mm-hmm.
or they shouldn't be. It should be able to determine whether they did it for the tax benefits or not, depending on the documentation. So I don't know. I don't think there's much interest on the part of the state legislature, along with everything else that's of issue these days, that radon will become a very attended to our issue.
The money that we used to operate on to do the survey did come as a special appropriation from the state legislature, but it's not involved in mitigation. It's just trying to define how bad the problem was, and where the problem areas are.
So the bad news is, if you test and find out you need mitigation assistance, you're probably not going to get any kind of financial assistance from state officials.
No, I should say something very important.
Okay.
No,
this is Rich Seifert.
The banks have done something. KeyBank actually has made available a loan at 0.5% below market rate for radon loans.
Oh.
By God, when they do something that's worthy of mention, I want to say it, because this is not very common, especially with the housing industry the way it is. You know, everybody's taken the banks and the Alaska Housing Finance mm-hmm. Corporation to task on it. KeyBank went out of their way and had a seminar with myself and other radon-interested technologists there, and made a pronouncement that they would do this. I don't know if they've made any loans on that basis, but by golly, if you have an interest, go look at to KeyBank, because they told me they would do this.
And they're going to send you thank you notes for that commercial message.
We're about out of time.
That's all right. No, this is fine. We're about out of time. Gentlemen, I want to thank you for a very interesting hour, and I'm sure the people who called in have gotten good answers to their questions. Rich, before we go away, very quickly, how do people find or call Cooperative Extension Service so they can find out about radon mitigation and testing?
They can call my office at 474-7201, or they can call the downtown office at 452-1548.
Okay, the second number is 452-1548. The first number was
474-7201.
Okay, and that's Cooperative Extension Service.
And I would urge everybody who's interested to ask for our radon information pamphlet,
which
we put together as basic information on where to go for further information.
Good. And for further information through your local public television station, remember to watch The Air We Breathe, which airs this Tuesday, the 17th of October at 9 p.m. It was produced by Cooperative Extension Service in cooperation with KUAC. It's about household pollution in general and has some very good segments on radon. Next week on Sunday at noon, Living with the Iron Fist, a woman who was for many years battered by her husband and who extricated herself from that situation, is going to talk about how she learned to live without violence in her life. I think it will be a very interesting and provoking show. I hope you join us. I'm Susan McInnes for KUAC and for Sunday at Noon. Back to you, Ken, and to the opera.